Welcome to the monthly Three Edge View from the Edge for February 2026. I'm Fritz Foltz, the Chief Investment Strategist here at Three Edge, and joining me here, as he does each month, is Eric Biegelhuizen, Director of Investment Research and Deputy Chief Investment Officer here at Three Edge Asset Management. And as we do each month, Eric and I will provide our firm's most recent outlook for the global capital markets, which is based on our proprietary Three Edge research model. We have decided to make a slight change here to the monthly video. So beginning this month, we'll focus on those major asset class groups which we believe are the most interesting or newsworthy at the moment. And that means today we're going to focus on the equity markets in the US and Japan, as well as India. And then we're going to take a closer look at gold. So we hope that you enjoy this new format. We have a great deal to cover. Let's get started. And through the first month and a half of the year, there's certainly been no shortage of news. However, up to now, U.S. equity markets have remained fairly range-bound. S&P is basically flat. NASDAQ is down a bit thus far in 2026. Meanwhile, Japanese equities up over 15% year-to-date, gold up 13% year-to-date. So to get us started, turn things over to Eric. And to begin, we will review the Three Edge Asset Class Matrix, which served to provide sort of a big picture of our outlook. So, Eric, over to you.
Great. Yeah, thanks, Fritz. Well, we can see here, much like I think last month, no arrows on this chart. So our outlook is, from a high level, unchanged. That doesn't mean that there aren't things happening under the hood. And I think we'll get into some of those more topical asset classes in particular. But for now, we maintain a relatively positive outlook on equities, broadly speaking, including the U.S., on a risk-adjusted basis, though, we do find international developed and emerging market equities a bit more attractive. And we still maintain that positive outlook on hard assets like gold and commodities.
All right. So now we will dive in, take a closer look at the major asset classes. And let's begin with U.S. equities, where at least for the first months, we've seen this rotation away from the mega cap tech. Someone called it the anything but tech stock trade. So what is the model saying about the status of the U.S. equity markets?
Yeah, well, you know, as we just saw in the matrix, the model, the research maintains this current outlook for U.S. equities being slightly positive. You know, we've noted for some time that U.S. equities remain significantly overvalued by our measure. And I just want to share a chart here of the price to sales ratio for the S&P 500 going back 100 years. And while this is just one indicator of valuation that does feed into our research, it is shocking how high the current ratio is at around 3.5. Again, this is not a tactical timing instrument, but it's very instructive on the estimated annualized return for this particular asset class over the next 10 years, though clearly not in a straight line. You know, anyhow, we do continue to see U.S. equities flirting with making new all-time highs, as you alluded to, Fritz, which is feeding that positive investor psychology feedback loop. You know, it seems like investors are keenly watching to see if AI-focused companies can generate reasonable enough revenues to support the aggressive capital spending, the CapEx that's underway and anticipated later this year. Here's a chart that shows the aggressive spend by companies in the AI ecosphere, which up until late 2025 was entirely financed through their free cash flow, which was no problem. But now we're seeing more and more companies continuing investments through debt financing, which becomes problematic when there are no revenues to service that debt. So as you noted, Fritz, the rally in the U.S. is broadening out with small cap securities and value stocks outpacing those of the tech companies that brought the market up to where it is now. You know, here we see in the chart the Russell 2000, which is an index of, you know, that's representative of small cap stocks here in the U.S., and the Russell 1000 value index, which is representative of value stocks in the US. And then alongside that is the NASDAQ 100, which is an index of tech companies. And we just see significant outperformance in the small and the value space versus those big tech names that led the recent rally. You know, so concerns have risen, particularly around software-focused names, with Anthropic in particular, their latest release, that AI will drive these firms to have no competitive advantage. Time will tell, but perhaps the sell-off was a bit overdone. We don't know just yet. And with tax season upon us, we may see additional fiscal stimulus from the big, beautiful bill act alongside the belief that there may be more monetary loosening in the form of lower rates in the months ahead. And so all of that may contribute to this positive momentum in U.S. equities.
Excellent. Very good. Very nice deep dive into U.S. equities. So now we'll shift gears. We'll move over to Asia and talk about the Japanese equity market. And there's just been a ton of news coming out of Japan thus far in 2026. And so what is the model telling us of what's going on over there in terms of their bonds, but really their equity markets?
Yeah, we continue to maintain a very favorable outlook for Japanese equities. The new prime minister, Sanae Takaichi, called for a snap election and won by a landslide, giving the Japan's Liberal Democratic Party, the LDP, its biggest electoral win. And this was very well received by the markets, and that rewarded Japanese equities with additional gains now, as to your point, up around 14-15% this year. The LDP is likely to begin making amendments to Japan's constitution, which has remained in place since its founding in 1955 following World War II. And so the potential for additional government spending in the defense industry, AI, semiconductors, advanced manufacturing, next generation nuclear power, as well as while doing all of that, allegedly cutting taxes as well. So all that said, and as we've noted in the past, concerns do remain regarding a large unwinding of that popular yen carry trade as the potential for it to become less profitable or outright unprofitable. And that remains a risk should the yen strengthen significantly. You know, it's interesting, like 2 weeks ago or so, after we saw a significant strengthening in the yen, this concern really came to the fore, and we saw a significant unwind of retail investors' short yen positions by around $100 billion in just the span of a few days. And yet it had very little impact on the equity market in Japan, nor the global markets, which was really the concern. So it's still something to watch, and it's a risk we're concerned about, but even a little bit of that unwind didn't have as big an impact as we expected. And there are concerns about Japan's exorbitant debt to GDP ratio, currently around 230%, the largest in the developed world. The new initiatives by this administration has raised concerns about Japan's ability to service that debt, as we've seen Japan's bond yields across the curve rise recently. Though Takaichi suggests that even with all the programs they want to enact and the tax cuts, they won't need to issue more debt. I guess we'll see. So these are all things to watch. But in the meantime, you know, the research likes what it's seeing.
Excellent. Yeah, it's having a very good year so far. All right, so now we'll focus our last equity market that we're going to dig into, and that's going to be the Indian equity market. And I guess the big news is this trade deal with the U.S. So what are we seeing there in terms of our research?
Yeah, big trade deals coming out of India, something we've been optimistic for quite some time. We thought we'd even see that U.S.-India deal last year. But we did get that deal, lowering tariffs on goods imported to 18%, down from 50. So that's a huge step in the right direction. India agreed to cut its tariffs on U.S. goods to zero, stop buying Russian oil, and to purchase $500 billion in U.S. goods. The Indian currency, the rupee, that rose on the news the most in over 3 years, and Indian equities rallied with big gains, the largest gains I think they've seen since 2021. All that said, you know, we are seeing a different fact sheet come out of the White House that potentially changes the deal that they had previously agreed to. So obviously more to come on that in the days and the weeks ahead. But also noteworthy for India, even before the U.S.-India deal, was the deal that India struck with Europe. And that was like a grand deal that was two decades in the making. And this deal covers almost 2 billion people and 25% of global GDP. This is going to boost commerce, reduce tariffs on 97% of EU exports to India. So this is then the market is definitely rewarding Indian equities on this collective news from its recent low, though it still has a long way to go to catch up to the outsized gains that other international equity markets have enjoyed over the past year or so. So we still find Indian equities overvalued by our measure, but they maintain solid growth. And the yield curve measure we calculate for the region continues to be positively sloped, you know, and that's indicative of the potential for future growth in the months ahead. So we're keeping an eye on credit spreads widening in the region, which can be notoriously volatile, but could indicate some concern near term. We'll be keeping an eye on.
Excellent. Yeah, a lot of action in the ex-U.S. equity market, a lot of positive action. So, all right, shifting gears now to hard assets, and we'll focus on gold, which, you know, despite hitting a It was a fairly decent speed bump that Gould hit when they announced the nomination of the next Fed chair. So where are we now in terms of our outlook for gold, which, again, is it up over 13%, something like that, year to date?
Yeah, we maintain that positive outlook on gold. You know, you can see here, we all witnessed this intra-month gain of over 25% in January, only to settle back a little bit, but still continuing to make gains. It touched over $5,400 per ounce. And President Trump, as you noted, announced Kevin Warsh as the nomination to chair the Federal Reserve Bank to replace the current chair, Jerome Powell, when his term is up in May. You know, and the market initially interpreted him as a hawkish pick that may actually be good for the dollar and therefore not so good for gold, but generally has seemingly erred on the side of him likely to engage in more rate cuts, though potentially without engaging in quantitative easing measures that some other potential picks may have been more inclined to do. Either way, it does seem like market participants and central banks from around the globe continue to diversify away from dollar-based holdings. You can see here that shift slowly eroding for U.S. debt holdings, but significantly increasing for gold holdings. And no doubt, we see many geopolitical flashpoints around the globe, and that continues to boost the attractiveness of gold as this haven asset. And, you know, we've noted this for several months as well, but when gold advances so aggressively, like 25% in a month, there comes an increased risk of, you know, a consolidation or a profit-taking period near term, which we also saw. But longer term, gold may continue to move up if we see weakening job numbers. That's going to encourage the Federal Reserve to continue, you know, easing monetary policy by lowering rates to fight that side of their dual mandate.
All right. Excellent. All right. So, as I mentioned at the outset, we focus on those asset classes that we believe are worth a closer look, if you will. But so before we sign off, we're going to put the asset class matrix back up and just sort of, Eric, if you could just give an overview again of, you know, writ large, if you look across the major asset class groups, how would you summarize that maybe?
Yeah, we remain in a bit of a holding pattern in terms of our outlook. It has not really shifted much despite things under the hood moving around. And so we favor equities broadly, including the U.S., but on a more risk-adjusted basis, prefer Japanese equities, China and emerging market equities, as well as Indian equities. And as we mentioned, we continue to favor gold and commodities.
Super. All right. That was great. I think that was a good way for us going forward because it does allow you to really dig into some of those asset groups. So thank you very much for that, for providing that update as we continue to navigate our way through the global capital markets here in 2026. So that will do it for this month's edition of the 3EDGE View from the Edge. If you would like a hard copy of the newsletter version for this month, that is on our website, and that is 3EDGEAM.com. As a reminder, all our videos are available in our video library on our 3EDGE YouTube channel. And if you would be so kind as to subscribe to our 3EDGE YouTube channel, we would be most appreciative. So, on behalf of Eric and everyone here at 3EDGE, thanks for listening. This commentary is intended for information purposes only and does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy securities. The opinions expressed in View from the Edge are those of Mr. Foltz and Mr. Beagleisen and are subject to change without notice in reaction to shifting market conditions. This commentary is not intended to provide personal investment advice and does not take into account the unique investment objectives and financial situation of the listener. Investors should only seek investment advice from their financial advisor. The observations include information from sources that 3EDGE believes to be reliable, but the accuracy of such information cannot be guaranteed. Investments, including common stocks, fixed income, commodities, and ETFs, all involve a risk of loss that investors should be prepared to bear.